You're listening to MTL. More to Life is the Christian Union St. George's School, Harpenden, and our vision is to make God's presence known to this generation.
The Scandal of Grace is, I think, what was on the posters. Firstly, can anyone tell me what grace means or what they think grace might mean? Yeah, Philippa. The what, sorry? The prayer you speak before? You eat a meal. Ah, that's one of the meanings of grace. Yeah? Grace of God. What does God's grace like mean? Yeah, Abby. Yeah, that's probably the closest I've got. That I've got here. Grace is getting something good when you deserve something bad. Not to be confused with mercy, which is not getting something bad when you do deserve something bad. Has everyone kind of got that? All right. So I'm going to start with a bit of a theology lesson. So at the beginning of time, God creates man in his likeness, and it's good. And they're kind of like designed to go together as we are. So what we have is this close, intimate relationship between man and God at the beginning of time. And this is just free from stereotypes and discrimination and labels. Just man and God in close relationship, really. Okay, so then, next of all, man is tempted and we disobey God. And this disobedience throws in a huge, great barrier into the relationship. So we can't touch him because he's so pure that, and we're so sinful that they just repel. The two things just repel. So, yeah, time goes on. Humanity's expanding and we're staying sinful because we're mankind. But God is merciful. God is good. And God's still loves us because he's still creating us, but he has mercy on those who can show by their actions that their hearts are truly sorry. And you know, the action that God values from us is that in the Old Testament anyway, is that he would require them to take a lamb, and the lamb would be the sign of their best. Like everyone had lambs, and they would take their best lamb and they would give it up, they would kill it as a sign to show God that they were sorry. yeah, this is what they just did. And so, like, even so, people were forgetting God's mercy. And so only a very few were, like, able to be in relationship with him. And God kind of protected these through the family line of Abraham, who he made that promise to, that he was going to have a lot of descendants. But yeah, mankind's going further and further downhill, and yeah, we've forgotten his mercy. And you know, I think we do that still. Like, we forget that if we're going to make ourselves acceptable to God, then we can do it. But instead of doing that, we choose sometimes to hide in the darkness, because darkness is a very effective thing to be hiding in. So time goes on, and the situation's getting more and more hopeless. And however hard we try, we can't reach him. So, you know, he just goes and does the craziest thing that I still can't get his head at my head. That I still can't get my head around. His head around. Yeah. He comes down from where we can't reach him. And he comes and reaches us. So he comes down and he lives among us. And he becomes a human. And he's still 100% God. And this is the guy that we know as Jesus Christ, good man. But you know what I still don't get is that he didn't come to tell all these sinners that they were rubbish and they were bad and that they're completely messed up and they couldn't touch him. But he comes to tell them the opposite. And you know, let's look at Mary Magdalene. She's a prostitute. And I wonder at the word prostitute, like, what most of us are thinking, probably that it's dirty and dangerous and disgusting and probably quite a lot of scumminess. I mean, you know, no one really goes to Luton anymore. No, I'm joking. Okay, no. That was a joke. But yeah, you know, the people of her time probably thought exactly the same, probably worse, because, you know, in our society, you just look at some of the magazines and you can't really tell the difference, to be honest. But yeah, so yeah, they probably thought the worse than her. And then this guy Jesus comes in and he sees her and he sees past all these labels that she's been given by society and by herself. And he just sees into what her past has made her into, and into this precious daughter of God that's like completely lost and things. And like, he gives her jobs and he gives her roles, and he takes this piece of scum as society had made her, and then just made her into something that was like, that God valued really greatly. Yeah, so God on earth is Jesus. So he gets to know so many people like her, like Mary Magdalene, that he's created to be so valuable and so unique, that have just been downcast by what society expects them to be. And you know, he's come to show them like what the true nature of God is. And you know what they do next? They fear God, but what they do next is they take him and they start to accuse him of all these things that he's never done. And they twist his words into lies. And you know, there's this amazing bloke that's just come around in the last few years, and he's been setting them people free that have been held by evil spirits and their sins and things, and he's raised their dead, and he's healed people with conditions that you never would really even like to imagine. And yeah, then they start taking the mick out of him. This is Christ. This is God. You know, God creates everything. The mountains that are just so high that people go on dangerous missions to climb them. He's created all of that. What they do is they blindfold him and they beat him up. And they say, mate, if you're a prophet, then you can tell us who hit you, because you're blindfolded and you can't see. And all he gets is, prove to us you're the Son of God. Prove it. Go on, prove it. Prove you're the Son of God. But they've seen his miracles. They know exactly who he is, but they don't want to accept it because they can't handle that kind of goodness. And so we've got this guy, Pilate, who's the governor of the people of Jerusalem, and he has three prisoners on death row, and he says to the crowd, you know, we've got to release one of them. We should release Jesus, because, you know, he hasn't actually done anything wrong. And yeah, there's nothing I can see that he's done wrong. But the crowd, this gets me every time. Like, the crowd, they start chanting, release Barabbas. No, Barabbas is a murderer. So Pilate lets this murderer, this criminal, go free. And he's a little bit like, okay, if you insist, then I'll punish Jesus. But there is really, really no reason for him to die. But, you know, now the crowd are chanting, crucify him. And, you know, crucifixion wasn't a punishment that you gave somebody if they nicked something or something, because they had ways of stoning people to death. They hurled stones at them till they died, which is pretty nasty in itself. But crucifixion was the punishment, was like the ultimate punishment they gave to the worst of the worst criminals that had beat people up and things. And murderers and things. But yeah, in the end, Pilate doesn't really have a choice. So he can't really do anything to save him but hand over Jesus as a criminal. Now, the soldiers take Jesus, and you know what they do? They dress him up in a bright purple robe, which is the colour of kings. And this isn't to honour him or to make him look good. This is so that they can laugh at him. And they make him a crown out of thorns. And, you know, thorns over here, we imagine these diddy things that stick out of blackberry trees. And I used to go blackberry picking quite a lot as a kid, because I live in the country, not near Luton. And, yeah, they've got these things. And, you know, sometimes you'll catch a hand on them and they'll, like, scratch. And it'll be a bit annoying. It probably won't draw blood. But, you know, thorns in Jerusalem. I mean, my brother went to Israel about this time last year, and he brought back one of those thorns that stuck out of the trees. They're about this long. They're about 3 inches long. They are sharp and they are stiff. So, basically, over his forehead, bloody. Yeah. And then what they did next, which is like the kind of pre-act before he dies, which is they make him stand before the people of Jerusalem, these people that he really, really cares about. And they whip him. And this isn't just a normal whip. This is, they called it the cat of nine tails slash. And this was a whip for special occasions. It had nine strips of leather coming out of it, with bits of flint and glass stuck in them. Not nice at all. And you know, they whipped him with that thing 39 times. And you might think 39 is a bit of a random number. But the deal with this is that they used to say that 40 lashes from that thing would kill you. So they stop one short. You know, and like at the beginning, it would have just been tearing skin off. But as time went on, there wouldn't have been much skin left to tear off. So they would have been cutting out chunks of flesh and stuff. I don't want to think about what it would look like at the end at all. And then what they do is they hand him his cross to carry to the hill. And yeah, please bear in mind that seeing as they did intend for him to die, they didn't really bother smoothing the surface of the wood. And this cross would have been about the same weight as Nathan, maybe a bit lighter, but that's still quite heavy. I'm joking. But then, yeah, so they make him carry his cross to the hill, and then they lie him down on his cross, and then they nail him to it. So that's a nail through each of his hands and each of his feet, and one through both of his feet. Wrist, I'm told. And then they would, using the rope, they would erect the cross into the air, and they stuck a plaque above his head saying, "This is the King of the Jews." Now this, you might think again, this might have been to give him honour, but seeing the current state he's in, this is also a bit of a mick take. But yeah, and then I don't know how people think that crucifixion works, but it's basically probably the slowest, most horrible death, which is that you're hanging by your wrists up here, by nails through them, and so you're hanging down like this, and if you've actually ever tried to stand like this, which I'm sure you probably haven't, you can't actually breathe very easily. So what they would have to do is you'd have to push yourself up through the nails on your feet, breathe, and then relax back down so your feet did not kill themselves, basically. So it wasn't, they didn't hang him up there to bleed to death. They hung him up there to die of suffocation and exhaustion from when he couldn't push himself up anymore. And then they left him to die. But you know, when Jesus died on the cross, do you think he went to heaven? Okay, because, yeah, we know that he went to heaven after he rose again a few days later. But no, when Jesus died on the cross, he died with our sin and our death. Death was our punishment for our sin, which he took upon himself. And death means hell. Now, I don't know what you guys believe about hell. In the medieval times, they used to hang up paintings of men and women being tortured in hell by little demonic creatures. But this was mainly as a scare tactic so that they would follow the church, so the church had power. See, we're humans, we don't know what we're doing, really. But, you know, I don't think that image of hell is completely accurate. But what I do know is that hell is a place where God is not. Hell is a place that he is set apart from himself, which is the place where God cannot be, because to be in hell is to be in a place where you are separate from God. And you know, separate from God means separate from all goodness. So no laughter, no nothing. I mean, being separate from God, I mean, in this day and age, it probably doesn't mean that much. It means maybe you won't get to go to church for a little bit, which might not be great for all of you, but, you know, but this means nothing goodness, because goodness comes from God. God is the source of all things that are good. So down there, there's nothing good. There's no laughter. There's nothing to even, like, break the silence, even for a second of relief. But, yeah, so God was there. Jesus was 100% man as well as 100% God. And he was in this place where God could not be. But he's still pure and perfect because God is pure and perfect. He doesn't change. And, you know, I think the reason why Jesus rose again after 3 days is because hell couldn't have coped any longer than that. See, we have the sinners and God in the Old Testament having to repel from each other because they can't touch each other. But, you know, I reckon it had the same effect. And, you know, in Pirates of the Caribbean, in the first one, the first description we get of Captain Jack Sparrow is that he is so evil that hell itself spat him back out. But no, hell is a place for evil. Like, the only way it can spit you back out is if you're pure and separate from your sin. And what Jesus did when he went there is he took the sin from humanity, past, present, and future, and he separated it from us as far as the east sky is from the west. And, you know, next time you go outside, look at the sky and see how massive the sky is, and see that the west is over... I don't know where the west is. The west is one side of the sky and the east of the other side. And those two sides of the sky can never, ever meet. They can never touch. And that's how far away we are from our sin. Blows my mind. Grace is getting something good when you don't deserve it. And, you know, Jesus taught us to love our enemies. And, like, it's easy to love people when they love you. It's easy. Like, anyone can do that. But what we see of God loving people who hated him is that we hated him. We nailed him to the cross. And he died for our sin. That's what we need to follow. But through accepting his blood, we can become true children of God while we are still here. And, like, we even have an inheritance that we can pray for things and he's going to give to us. And we have a family wherever we are. You know, and in this society, really, we have so much just stuff that we don't necessarily need, that having things and being able to pray for things doesn't actually probably mean that much to us now. But in terms of families, there are so many broken families in this culture that I know my family is strewn across the universe, it feels like sometimes. But, you know, since God is my father, did you know that my brothers and sisters are you ugly lot? Okay, so, yeah, be careful. And I always thought on this and thought about everything that Jesus did and all that he went through. I was like, wow, he just went through that and there was nothing in it for him. But, you know, there was actually something in it for him. Do you know what was in it for him? You. Okay, he gave his life so you can be in relationship with him, close and intimate, the way he meant it right at the beginning when he just created everything and him and man were together and that was that. And, you know, he doesn't want to laugh at your mistakes because he loves you. And he loves you because he loves you because he loves you. There's no way to escape it or change it. And that's just the truth. And, you know, maybe you know that you've messed up. And you think that there's no way he really could love you because you know that he's perfect and you're not. And the two things don't go, as we've already looked at. But, you know, I've been there too. And, you know, last week... we had an art trip to Florence in Italy. It was lovely. It's such a nice city. You should get out there sometime. But on the second night, I had to phone up the boarding house here where I live at school to find out the results of the head girl vote. And, you know, I think I probably bigged it up a bit in my head. And I got a bit full of myself and thought that everyone would vote for me so I'd win. No. Yeah, when I phoned up, they told me that I didn't get it. And I was like, oh, okay. And they're like, well, you didn't get Vice either. And, you know, there was two places, head girl and Vice head girl. And there were only three of us that went for it, which means that I lost. And, you know, when I came back from outside, from my phone call outside, I came back and I was so worried that all the people sitting on my table were going to see me cry that I did something stupid and I drank, and I drank quite a lot. And, you know, after a while, it didn't really matter that much about the whole head girl thing because we were laughing and it was all gone and I wasn't really thinking about it. But, you know, when I got back to the hotel, I couldn't really talk properly anymore. And instead of not letting anyone see me cry, I managed to burst into tears all over a whole bunch of people. And it was seriously not nice. And in the morning, as well as feeling bad, there was this massive cloud of humiliation following me about. You know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with drinking, you know. Jesus turned water into wine. Good man. but everyone had seen me lose control, and I was thinking, God, I'm supposed to be a leader. I'm supposed to be representing you. And now I've done this. How the hell is anyone going to give me any level of respect? And, you know, I didn't actually say this to him at the time because I was a bit hiding from God because I'd felt like I'd mucked up so bad. And I felt like I was in his bad books. But you know what? Actually, the second that I accepted what Jesus had done for me, the second that I accepted that he took my pain from me when he died, I am never going to be in his bad books again. I'm erased from his bad books, if there is such a thing, which I'm sure for God there might be. But you know, there is nothing that I can do that is ever going to make him love me any less. There is nothing that I can do that is going to make my heavenly dad disown me. And, you know, that is the scandal of grace. Now, 1 Peter 1:18 says this. You know that in the past you were living in a worthless way, a way passed down from the people who lived before you. But you were saved from that useless life. You were bought, not with something that ruins like gold or silver, but with the precious blood of Christ, who was like a pure and perfect lamb. Christ was chosen before the world was made, but he was shown to the world in these last times for your sake. Through Christ you believe in God, who raised Christ from the dead and gave him glory. So your faith and your hope are in God. Now that you have made your souls pure by obeying the truth, you can have true love for your Christian brothers and sisters. So love each other deeply with all your heart. You have been born again, and this new life did not come from something that dies, but from something that cannot die. You were born again through God's living message that continues forever.
You've been listening to the More to Life podcast.
And I'm still